This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yeah, buddy, welcome in. Or should I do a little cackle for Matt Humans? I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Appreciate you making us a part of your night. However you may be tuning in, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We are jam-packed, jelly-tight today with a lot going on, including the Alamo Bowl, where USC and TCU are doing battle. Horned Frogs with a 14-13 lead early in the third quarter. USC still laying 1.5. Totals 51.5. And maybe you were a donk like me and you laid 6.5 with USC last night. Hand up, I did it. Could have gotten 4 earlier today. Now it's 1.5. I kind of still like USC, but I was dead wrong about how this game would go. You know, the impact of Josh Hoover, the quarterback for TCU, not being there, I thought would be a bigger deal for their offense, but they've been just fine. And on the other end, USC has not moved the football as well as you'd like in finished drives, which I'm really curious because they're not all that great defensively. And if you're not going to be elite offensively, what exactly is USC? Because on the surface level, that's a team I thought about next year. Maybe that's a team that can make the playoff next year with Lincoln Riley if they invest in the portal heavily, because they have a quarterback coming back who's now a multi-year starter, not just from his time at UNLV and Jaden Maiava, but also now a couple years at USC, but a bit of an uninspiring effort in the Alamo Bowl right now for the Trojans, but they have some time here with 11-11 to go in the third to make some noise and potentially still cover our 6.5. We do have a basketball game in the association about to get going momentarily. I have a couple of bets on this one, as it's the Kings going to the Clippers, clip laying 9.5, totals 218.5. We went player props, and this was up at VSiN.com/picks late last night. It was in the email blast sent by Bill AD early this morning. I took Neat Clifford over 7.5 points, also over 3.5 rebounds. Thought it might be a good matchup against the Clippers. I think there's a chance he gets a little bit more run lately. There was some hope for me that Keegan, what is his name? I was almost called him Keegan Murray. I was going to call him Keegan Bradley. I thought he was going to get ruled out. He's going to end up giving it a go. That's the risk you take with these player props. If you're trying to bet that someone's going to benefit from an injury, every now and then you're going to get got, and I might have gotten got here. But the number's pretty low on Neat Clifford, the rookie out of Colorado State, who does get a good run off the bench. I still think he has a chance to get over at least one of them. We did pay heavy juice on the rebounds. Just want to be transparent at minus 148. I don't traditionally do that a ton, but there wasn't anything combo-wise available on him. But I still like Neat Clifford to have a decent game in this game. In terms of the side of the total, I think about laying it with the Clippers, who might be figuring things out. And as far as the total goes at 218.5, maybe the over. That feels a little bit low because I'm looking at two games going on right now. Jazz and the Celtics. Boston leads 112-105. That totals up to 253.5. Boston is in the lead. They're laying 8.5. And then early in the game between the Lakers and the Pistons, 4:17 to go in the first. Pistons lead 23-21. Detroit's laying 2.5 right now, and the total in that game is 241.5. 218.5 feels a little bit low. I would consider that, but I like my Neat Clifford plays a little bit better there. Now, when it comes to the Pistons-Lakers game, we are sweating out a bet on Duncan Robinson and Jake LaRavia. Drinking a lot of milk today. Let's see. Duncan Robinson, no points in that game so far. But, hey, the point is he's got to heat up from the outside. And then I believe it is Jake LaRavia over 14.5 points and rebounds. He has 2 points. One rebound, one assist in the first, so 2, 3, 4. You know what? He's pacing somewhat okay there. We could be in a good spot when it comes to that. In terms of college basketball, in case you missed it earlier, some of the bigger teams that wrapped up. Seton Hall with a comeback to top Marquette, 79-73. Oh, man. Shaka Smart. Things are not going well over there, man. Marquette, every single time they've been tested, they have failed the exam. I mean, it looks like me in seventh grade. And for that matter, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, all the way through college for the most part. Miami topped Pitt 76-69. ACC play underway. A lot of these conference plays underway right now. We had Pitt catching 10.5, so that got home. And then North Carolina beat Florida State 79-66. Number was 14.5 last night. Was 13.5 this morning. Early afternoon, I saw 12.5. I said, you know what? 2 points off the 14.5 that I considered but didn't end up betting. Let me get those 2 points of value. I laid it with North Carolina. That does get home, ends up being a winner. It was up at VSiN.com/picks earlier in the day. In terms of the action going on right now in college hoops, Butler and Creighton going at it as hard as they can. Creighton 82, Butler 73. We've got 2.5 to go there. And when I was looking at that game last night, you know, Creighton maybe doesn't have the star power that they did the last couple of years, at least the continuity that we're used to. I mean, they had a roster that felt like was returning together, like as a whole, for a couple of seasons. So some newer names being mixed in there, but they've got depth. That's the thing that jumped out to me when I was examining what Creighton is right now, is that they had a lot of depth, and then I really didn't trust that Mata on the road. I didn't end up laying anything in this game, but I did think about Creighton. Creighton closes a 5.5-point favorite, total 156.5. So let's see, we're at 158, so we've already gone over the total when it comes to that game going on right now. We are sweating a bet that I don't think is going to be very much of a sweat here. I took 8.5 with Cal at home to Louisville. Louisville leads 80-64. So you know what? That's going to be the loser. We went 3-0 up until then. That will be 3-1 in college basketball. Cal has, you know, just one marquee win this year. It was over UCLA, and how do we value that win at this point in the year? Louisville, I believe they're legit. I really like Pat Kelsey and the kid Cronwell that they got from Xavier. I mean, he can stroke it from the outside. I mean, he's a straight-up killer from beyond the arc. And right now, they're up 80-64. They're laying 17.5 on the road in Berkeley. Total in that game is at 161.5. I wouldn't touch anything right now, but I like this for Louisville. Could have been a sleepy spot where you don't take Cal serious enough, having to go cross-country to open up conference play. That could have been tricky. They're taking care of business. I think Louisville is going to be a really good team that potentially could win a couple tournament games once we get into the dance later on this year. In the second half, we're just about to finish up. I heard Tim Murray mention this. 18 seconds to go, and Notre Dame's up 45-40 on Stanford. My God. What are we doing? Well, 45-40 in a basketball game. Did they raise the hoops? Did the lights go out? That is insane. Gonzaga is up on San Diego 80-62. They're laying 21.5 right now. Let's see. They closed as 28.5-point favorites. So you can get a discount with 7:32 to go at 21.5, about 7 points off the closing number, if that is something you are into at this point in time. And, Santa Clara is down at Portland. I'm going to bet this one. Santa Clara, Herb Sendek, he's been there forever. He's been given a lot of leash, and I think he has maybe his best team yet. They were pretty good last year, but they might be better this year. And right now, you can get them on the road at Portland, where they were, I believe, 12-point favorites on the road. Let's see, 13.5. Okay, on principle, I'll take a little nibble of Santa Clara, laying 4.5 right now. Let's see if the face ID will hook me up here and make sure I get in. Santa Clara, a lot of Santa lately, huh? Santa Clara, I don't see it. Why are you not available? Oh, there we go. 3.5. I'm not even watching the game. On principle, I'm just going to take a nibble. That's it. Have something to sweat out a little bit later on now in the show with that bet currently approved and -105, -3.5 on Santa Clara. It's a huge discount. Maybe there was an injury I didn't see, but right now my TVs are occupied with other games that are a little bit more important than Santa Clara going to Portland right now. Let's see, in terms of all the action, I believe that is everything right now to update you on. Waiting on the Kings and Clip to get going there in Los Angeles. And the end of Boston and Utah wrapping up right now with the Celtics up 6.5, totals 256.5 in game. Man, it just keeps climbing. As, you know, I was texting with Jonathan Von Tobel, you know, Money Moves, NBA senior analyst here at VSiN. I think that's still his title. I don't think he claims it. I think everyone still puts it on him. I'd love to hear his side of the story. Maybe you'll hear it tomorrow afternoon on Money Moves. But I had a bet on Keontae George tonight. And he's going off again. And I kept hearing JVT talk about George and how good he's been lately. So I bet him over 35.5 PRA because Ace Bailey was out of the lineup tonight. I thought maybe that could open up a couple more minutes and opportunities for Keontae George. Even though Boston's really good defensively against opposing guards, he's got 32-7-5 and a losing effort so far, down by 8 with 4:13 to go. And I was curious, you know, how has he moved when it comes to the most improved player market? Because JVT bet him a few nights ago at 15-1. He's down to 9-1 at FanDuel. I don't hate it. The problem with that market that I'll discuss a little bit later on in the program is I think there's probably like 8-9 guys that you can really make the case for most improved player. But he is someone I may add just because I trust JVT, who's been on top of this at 9-1. Still feels pretty good, and I expect some fluctuation throughout the rest of the season there. So that's where we stand. Now let's set up what we got going on for you over the course of the next 3 hours here on Cashing Out. Coming up bottom of this hour, Yogi Roth, Big Ten Network, will preview the college football playoff with one of the best in the business. Get his thoughts on Miami and Ohio State, plus the other games, Oregon, Texas Tech, Ole Miss, Georgia, and Bama and Indiana, because I get nervous when I hear a lot of the same, everyone on the same side of these games. I just get nervous, even though I'm on a lot of those sides. Like, I'm on Alabama, and I'm a bit nervous that everyone else is on Alabama, and maybe we're judging them based on name brand value and not what this Alabama team actually is. And we're holding Indiana's name brand against them. But we'll talk to Yogi Roth about that in about 20 minutes. Ryan Reynolds, he covers the NFL for Establish the Run. Really sharp guy from a betting angle. We'll talk about the awards. He has some interesting info when it comes to Offensive Rookie of the Year, MVP. I'm sorry, Chris Massaro. I'm going to get on my soapbox again. We're still friends, I think. I think we're still friends. Professional better. Chris Massaro doesn't like when I make my case for Matthew Stafford. And then the return of Dwayne Colucci. The Colucci back in business here. Going to join us 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. We'll go behind the counter over at the Rampart Casino. Get his thoughts on college football, the NFL, and of course the NHL, which he's great on. And then college hoops. Who better than hoops? Greg Hoops Peterson to join us at 1 a.m. Eastern time. And then a legend in the game, Scott Spreitzer, professional handicapper extraordinaire. He'll break down week 18 in the NFL. Plus, he will have college football playoff and bowl picks coming your way in our final hour on the air. But when we return here on Cashing Out, we have to hit the top stories in the National Football League. We've got legal issues up in New England. A quarterback's been named for the Colts, and John Harbaugh isn't getting caught up in the talk that his job is on the line. You'll hear from him on the other side of Cashing Out.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circus Sportsbook, downtown Las Vegas. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and I'll be with you all night long. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We are sweating out a bet. -6.5, USC in the Alamo Bowl. They're in the third quarter, 6:24 to go. TCU just picked up a big first down as they were operating deep in their territory to the point where after the snap, ended up throwing it and having to run out of their own end zone. Now they're at the 20-yard line. So a little bit of wiggle room there for them. But you know what? Credit to Sonny Dykes' squad, man. They are showing up in this game at the Alamo Bowl against a USC team that I thought, with Josh Hoover not available for the Horned Frogs, really TCU would be up against it. But that has not been the case, man. Updated number right now, it's still USC favored. You can get a -135, but I might be dead wrong. USC may just not care, man. When you think about USC and the elitist that they are in the world of college football, they probably think they're better than this. And I know I say that as if, like, the kids playing now played like back in the day under Pat Hayden. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about USC as if these kids care about the history. But I do think there's a level of, you know, the culture that's there at a program that's that massive and thinks that they're that special. And for the most part in their history, they've been pretty special. But this is beneath them. And for TCU, you know, you stay in the state of Texas. You have a chance to show out in front of your friends and family. And you get to take down big, bad TCU. Although, that looks like they're not going to rule that a fumble. Receiver was trying to catch a bubble screen, and he got popped right away. I think that's the correct call. I don't think he ever had possession. So we'll keep you updated on the Alamo Bowl as it develops throughout the night. You know what? That Creighton-Butler game got funky at the end. We got 4.1 to go. Creighton's only up 2, 87-85. Hold on now. Hold your horses. I don't know how that works. Like, how did that saying, I guess cowboys probably invented hold your horses as a saying. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. We are talking this out together, by the way. It's you and me. Appreciate you being with me, but this is what we're going to do. I'm going to have conversations with you where you can't actually answer unless you want to tweet me at Dustin Sweetelson, but it's going to happen a lot. I know. I have my therapy tomorrow. We'll talk to Robin about it and why I do that. But anyway, it looks like Creighton's at the charity stripe. They just hit a free throw. That makes it a four-point game with 4.1 to go. So that'll pretty much do it here. Although Creighton's not going to cover the number. Creighton was laying 5.5. They're up 4. Butler with a shot at the end, and it does not go in. So it ends up being 89-85, your final score. We go over the total of 156.5 there with, 174 being scored in a Big East showdown there in Omaha. So, all right, that's the college hoops. Let's now get to the National Football League. Here are the top stories. We'll attack them in the three-point stance.
The top stories in football. Every single day.
Ice up, son. Ice up.
This is 3-Point Stance.
Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
We'll play intramurals, brother.
All right, top story in the NFL right now, and it's kind of a weird one that you didn't really expect to see when you woke up today. And for us, you know, from our betting perspective, what can we get out of this situation? But the story we all saw today, Stephon Diggs facing felony strangulation, suffocation, and misdemeanor assault and battery charges today. Some of the talk on social media is that it was an employee who worked for him, people claiming that it's a chef. He's said that these claims are absolutely false, and the Patriots issued a statement where they stood by him as well. And I don't want to minimize Stephon Diggs, because Stephon Diggs at his peak is a stud. I mean, he's had a few games this year where he's been awesome. But at the same point in time, if there's a world, we're going to look at this not from the human element, because I don't have much to say about something that we don't know is or isn't true. We just know it's accusations against Stephon Diggs. But when I look at how this could impact the Patriots if he were to be suspended in the postseason and not be available for them offensively, I don't think on the surface it's as big of a loss if that should happen as people would anticipate. He's had a few really good games, but the thing that I would give Drake May the most credit in, he has made the most of those weapons. Like, every now and then I'll be watching the Patriots and I'll go, you know what? DeMario Douglas has had an impact on this game. And you'll see DeMario Douglas only has like 3 catches, but he makes plays. And Drake May knows how to utilize his skill set. Matt Collins, I think, has stepped up when Diggs hasn't been available at times. So while Stephon Diggs is still there as a high-end 2, maybe a low-end 1 in certain situations, he is the one for the Patriots. I do think New England passing the football would be fine without him. I think with the way they utilize the tight ends, Henry and Hooper, and the way that offense attacks the middle of the field, they will figure it out if they do not have Stephon Diggs. He's their leading receiver. I understand that numerically, when you look at the stats on the season, that you feel like that could be a massive loss should he get suspended. But at the same point in time, he's missed portions of games. He's dealt with a couple of injuries where he probably isn't playing as many snaps as you would normally be used to him seeing. But I think Kayshon Boutte has been fine when he's had to fill in for him. The way they use the running backs catching the ball out of the backfield. I think this offense with Josh McDaniels, they'll be okay. But we'll see what happens with Stephon Diggs. This is something to monitor, though, especially for someone who has futures on the Patriots and you're concerned about this. But I'm not as concerned as the surface level stats would tell you about a potential suspension if it happens indeed for one Stephon Diggs. We found out that the Indianapolis Colts are going to make a change at quarterback this week. It will be Riley Leonard starting at quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts. I think we all expected this, right? You can't throw Phillip Rivers out there again. There's just no point in doing so. You should at least find out what you have in Riley Leonard, because you don't know what's going to go on with Daniel Jones in the future as he tries to return from an injury that happened late in the season. You still have Anthony Richardson on the roster for now, but I don't anticipate that being the case next season. I think Indianapolis wants to kind of have a situation where they're moving on from Anthony Richardson at the end of the year. You know, against Jacksonville, he went 18-29 for a 145, threw an interception. You'd like to see him run the ball more. That was something Riley Leonard did in college when he was at Duke, when he was at Notre Dame. Being mobile, using his legs, I think it's a big part of his game. And I think maybe with a chance to catch his breath, learn and watch Phillip Rivers operate, this could be a world where Riley Leonard could get, you know, a little bit better. I don't know if he's a starter in the league, though. I mean, I'm not going to say no, but I highly doubt he ends up being a starter in the league. I just don't see the arm talent there. But there's plenty of guys in the league where I watch them throw a football, and I don't think they have the arm talent, but they win football games. I'm looking at you, Bo Nix. Shout out to Matt Humans for betting them to win AFC West. What a great bet by him. I said it as soon as it happened. Thought it was a brilliant play, a good number, anticipating the demise of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Matt was all over it, but I agreed with him. I thought it was a great play. Don't listen to what he tells you about what I said during that futures draft. In terms of Indy this week, looking at their matchup with Houston, you know, Texans laying 10.5. Total is 38.5, 39, depending on where you shop. I still like the under. I like the under with Riley Leonard playing against that vaunted defense and that pass rush. I also like the under because I don't really trust the Houston offense as well. So give me the under in that game. I think I'll make that an official play right now. Under 39.5 I'm seeing at FanDuel. I think I can get that at Boyd here during the next break. Next story up in our three-point stance, we're going to go to that Sunday night football game with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens, and the AFC North will be decided. Baltimore right now is a 3.5-point favorite. Your total is 40 and a hook. I'm already on the under 41.5 there, but some people believe this could be the end of the line for one John Harbaugh or for Mike Tomlin. Harbaugh was asked about that earlier today.
You just really don't have the space for that. You know, it's just not something that you have the ability to think about. It's not important. It was important. It had an impact and a bearing, you know, then you I think you'd think about it. But you think about it because it's always that way, you know. So it's probably all that stuff makes it all kind of interesting and kind of fun and real. It's sports, you know, and that's how sports are. And I think that's part of the intrigue of it all. So I feel like really honored to be a part of that. And if I was just being honest with you, I feel really honored to be a part of it. And I know there's always pressure. There's always pressure, but, you know, I think it was Billie Jean King who said pressure is a privilege, right? Was it Billie Jean King who said that? You know, and that's something that is earned, you know? So we feel like it's something very worthwhile to be in games like this. And if those are the things that are being talked about along with that, that's okay. You know, that's a privilege too, so. Let's get to work and let's go try to play our best game. Try to coach our best game.
I don't think a big enough deal is made that John Harbaugh is almost as weird as his brother. Like, I think because Jim is so much more weird than John Harbaugh, a little bit more, I want to say flamboyant with it. That's the word that comes to mind. Just aggressively weird. We don't talk about how weird John is. That was a bit of a weird answer, but I respect the tone of the answer. Look, he's kind of old school. He's above the noise. He's above all the talking points about his job and he's in trouble. Because you know why? He's secure with himself as a human being. He's going to wake up tomorrow, and if they fire him, he'll be like, fine, I'll go do something else in football. I love football. This is my life. But right now, I'm the coach of the Ravens, and nothing's changing at this point in time. So I can't worry about what doesn't exist right now, right in front of me in my life. So that is John Harbaugh. I don't know what to make of that game. I just like the under. I don't trust either team to do very much. You can start the new year off as a better bettor with a VSiN Pro subscription, and this is the final week to save 50% off the regular monthly price with our holiday special. Sign up now, get VSiN Pro access through May 1st for just $79. That's all the best bets from every show. Betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video, plus our college football betting guide complete with expert brackets. Start the new year with an edge. Go to vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Is the number right with Indiana and Alabama with the Hoosiers laying a touchdown? We'll discuss with Yogi Roth from the Big Ten Network next.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson with you live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Appreciate you joining us, making us a part of your night, however you may be tuning in. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, and the VSiN Watch app. A lot to get to on the program and a lot of college football coming your way over the course of the next 2.5 hours because we get going tomorrow, Miami and Ohio State doing battle. We'll get started there with the Cotton Bowl. But let's begin with the Rose Bowl. And to help us dissect this matchup between Alabama and Indiana, we're going to go to the Progressive Guest Line. Welcome in Yogi Roth, Big Ten Network analyst, one of my favorite voices when it comes to college football. And he joins us now on Cashing Out. So, Yogi, you got to talk to the guys today. You got to talk to the two teams, which I imagine they're ready to go for this moment. Indiana's a 7-point favorite. The total in the game is 47.5. When you hear Indiana is favored by a touchdown over Ala freaking Bama, Can you help us tell the story of this Hoosier team and how they got here?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. I might argue it's the best story of my lifetime in college football, and I think many can argue in the history of the game. When you look at the context of the one you're referencing, you've got a team that's won 18 national titles in Alabama, a team who's won zero in Indiana. I mean, just look at that on the surface. You've got one of the winningest programs ever, one of the losingest programs ever. So contextually, for Indiana, for the last 2 years, it's always been, they just did this since. They just did this since. But for the players and for Kurt Cignetti's staff, they don't look at it like that. Like, they're not really worried about the historical impact right now. And after spending time with them for a while today, along with Alabama at the Rose Bowl Media Day, they're focused on the present. You know, they know that they've been a part of something really special, but they also know they're a really talented team. And I think last year was the kind of storybook season. This year, their reality is they've played like the number one team in the country all year. And as an analyst calling primarily Big Ten games, when I take the emotion out of it and the historical context out of it and the brand names out of it, Indiana has played the best football in all the phases. And I love that they're seeded one. We'll see what the weather's like on game day, but I think they're the more complete team among these two, and I think they're the most proven team and complete team in the country. So we'll see. I mean, it's a gauntlet, as you know, but they are in a really good position. They're as healthy as they've been, at least offensively. They lose a starting defensive lineman, Stephen Daly, but overall, this team did not feel like the moment was too big after being around them this morning.
No, it's totally shifted. It shifted in a way we've never seen before. And for Alabama, you brought up the name brand. The name brand for Indiana was losing his program. Alabama was maybe the biggest program in college football. And I think from our betting perspective, Yogi, people like me, like, I took the points with Alabama here, but now I'm questioning, you know what, am I betting Alabama because I think this year's Alabama should be able to keep it within a touchdown? Or am I betting on that name brand bias? Do you believe Alabama's good enough to hang with Indiana in this game?
Well, they're good enough to win. I mean, if you look at Alabama this season, again, it's an incredible story. We got to spend time with Kalen DeBoer and his staff and players as well, and I'm a huge fan of him and what he stands for. And they start the season off, as you recall, at Florida State in a loss that sent the Tide faithful, you know, to a place they hadn't been a long time, which was a dark place. And then they go and win in Athens. And then they got five top 25 wins this season. And when you look at the Georgia SEC title game, beat pretty handily. The first half of the first round against Oklahoma on the road, it looks like it's over at 17-0, but on a 4th-and-2, they decide to go for it. Touchdown, comeback, starts to mount, and they're as confident as they've been in a long time. So, yeah, they're more than capable. I mean, you look defensively, they've got horses everywhere. Their scheme is really impressive. Offensively, they haven't been able to run the football pretty much all season. Kalen DeBoer told us earlier today, like, he thinks they're really close. And coaches often, you know more than we do, as we all know. So I think we'll have a hell of a game. The challenge is going to be Ty Simpson and Fernando Mendoza, their post-snap eyes and where they go. And that'll be a big challenge for Ty, because what Indiana does defensively, I think, is the best in the country.
Yogi Roth is our guest, Big Ten Network analyst at Yogi Roth on X. Let's talk about the Cotton Bowl. Miami and Ohio State, where the Buckeyes are laying 9.5. That total is at 40.5. It got up to 42.5. Now back down to 40.5. Two elite defenses, which means it comes down to which offense can figure it out and move the football. The number says it's Ohio State, but how do you anticipate this matchup going?
Yeah, they're the most talented team. I mean, I said Indiana's the most complete, and I believe that, but Ohio State isn't very far off, right? They're a knee down away from being the one seed and playing in the Rose Bowl, and this conversation being the opposite, right? Like, they're as gifted as a program in the country, they can go win the entire thing again. What I'm most curious about for them is against Indiana. I think they give up 5 sacks, and they, I think, 6 all season heading into the Big Ten title game. And I love when that happens for coaches, especially like Ryan Day. Okay, there was an issue. Now they've had 25 days for them to find an answer to that issue, and they will. You know, Ryan Day is one of the best coaches, if not the best coach, in the last couple seasons in college football, especially last year, and I think even how he's managed this year's team has been incredibly impressive. So I think they're the better team in this. I think if they don't turn it over, which, you know, Julian Sain hasn't done that. He threw a bad pick against Indiana. But again, I reference that defense being so elite. They have such a big-time defense under Matt Patricia. They have been dominant against everybody. I mean, they give up two big plays against Indiana, but that's about it defensively. So I think they're going to give Carson Beck issues. I think if Miami can get a couple explosives, they'll have a shot. But the problem is Ohio State's just they've got talent at every layer of that defense, the defensive front and Caden Curry, the linebackers and Arvell Reese. And, of course, in the back end, Caleb Downs. I mean, we're talking about, like, three first- or second-day draft picks and the latter probably top 10 draft picks, the last two guys I referenced. So I think it'd be really hard for Miami in this one. But I love the game for the pedigree of college football and what these two did last time they played in 02, 03 National Championship. And it's good for college football, I think, when Miami's back.
Oh, Yogi, I'm a Miami fan. You brought up, you punctured a wound there, an old wound that I thought went away with Ohio State and Miami, but I think you're spot on. That defense for Ohio State, there's probably five guys starting on NFL squads next year. What about the other Big Ten matchup? We have Orange Bowl, Oregon going at it with Texas Tech. Ducks are 2.5-point favorites, totals 51.5. Both defenses, again, probably going to show up and make this thing kind of low scoring. What do you make of this matchup?
Yeah, this one's going to be really fun on a bunch of platforms. I just released a scouting report on this exact game at yoption.com, which is my podcast Substack platform. And it's really fun when you dive into both of these teams. I think Texas Tech is the team that I feel like I know the least about. You know, statistically, they're talented. You know what your eyes tell you when you watch them play, but I haven't seen them play in Indiana like I did Oregon and Ohio State. I haven't seen them like Miami did against A&M. Like, I just haven't seen that, and I can't wait to do it because they're talented. They run the ball more than people think. They're clearly one of the better defenses in America, and I think Oregon is the team that no one's talking about. I think of all the teams in the field that get no play, Ohio State and Indiana, I think, and Georgia take up the most oxygen. I think the Ducks can go win the whole thing.
I agree.
And I think a big part is their offensive line. Joe Moore, finalist, and easily could have won it. Iowa ends up getting that, but still one of the better offensive lines in America, not one of the best. I think Dante Moore is the purest player in the country. And I think if he goes off and advances another round or two, you might see him advance to the number one pick in the NFL draft. I think that highly. I've felt that way since he came out of high school and being in Oregon in the spring and in training camp and only confirmed those thoughts. And most importantly, they're getting healthy. DeCorian Moore's back. Gary Bryant, two receivers are back. They got a tight end that's just a monster, the best tight end still playing in college football, and Kenyon Sadiq. And their front seven is real. Their defense is a top 10 defense in the country. So I think Oregon gets this done, but I say that without really knowing a lot about Tech, other than BYU, yep, Utah, yep, we've seen those games, but I haven't seen them at this level. So I'm so curious to watch. And then if they do win, or what era are we in? Because now, like, get ready, Vegas, because you can buy a team. And I think buying a team is not new, but buying a team when you evaluate properly is new, and that's where Texas Tech needs a ton of credit. Everybody's paying players, as we know, but to nail your evaluations, have it all come together, hat tip to this program, whether it ends this weekend or the next 2 days or not, we'll see. If they advance, their story is only going to continue to grow.
No, totally agree. He is Yogi Roth. Check out the podcast, the Y Option Podcast, at Yogi Roth on X and on the Big Ten Network. We'll be watching. Appreciate you doing this, man, and I hope you have a great New Year.
You too, man. Looking forward to a Rose Bowl. Hopefully it's dry, but it should be a blast. Thanks for the support.
Stay dry, Yogi. Stay dry. Okay. I thought he made a couple of really good points. The Dante Moore one, I agree 1,000,000%. For some reason, Dante Moore's not getting credit for the way he went to Happy Valley and won at Penn State in overtime because they lost to Indiana, who we're all agreeing is the number one team in the country this year. I think Oregon is a team that everyone is sleeping on, and if I was going to bet someone futures-wise, it would be the Ducks to win the title at the end of this thing. More information on why I believe Matt Stafford's the MVP next.
back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it. It's Cashing Out VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We've got action all over the place right now when it comes to college football, the NBA. Some updates for you there. As the Boston Celtics just put the finishing touches on the Utah Jazz. Game wasn't really in question, though, for most of this contest as Boston winds up the winner. Final score, 129-119. Boston closed as an 7.5-point favorite in that one. And the game goes, 248, right? Yeah, 248. We go way over that total of 243.5. There was steam on the over. It went from 240 and a hook up to 243.5. So that is where we stand with the Celtics and the Jazz. Currently going on, Pistons up 65-59 on the road at the Lakers. Detroit's laying 5.5 in game, 247.5. is the total, although let me refresh this. That doesn't look right to me. We're still in the second. I thought we were in the third already. Are we still in the second? No, we're still in the second. Okay. Still in the second quarter there with 143 to go, 67-59 now. It is Detroit with the lead. They're 6.5-point favorites in that game. And then Sacramento and the Clip just underway. Clippers up 39-26. They're up to 16.5-point favorites, the Clippers. They closed as 9.5-point favorites. This one actually got bet down from 11.5 to 9.5. Total right now sitting at 220.5. So it's going up, closed at 218, as we've touched on before the game started. I still kind of like that over, 220.5. But if it's a blowout with the Clippers dominating and winning big, there's always a chance the under is the side. So I'll stay away from the total in that game. We are sweating out a few bets. Some look good, some don't look bad. We'll keep you posted on what happens throughout the rest of the show. When it comes to the Alamo Bowl, the USC Trojans with the lead covering the number because they scored a touchdown and went for two, converted it. And right now, USC, let me get the updated, 24-14, they're up 10. Just kicked a field goal to go up 10 in the market. USC's laying 9.5, totals 45.5. They were down to 1.5-point favorites about, 30 minutes ago on the show. Now they're laying 9.5. This thing has gotten away from TCU, which, that's probably the way it was always going to go. But I will admit, as someone who backed USC laying 6.5, I didn't feel great with that start. They got off to a very slow start. And Ken Seals, who I think has been in college football for 6 years, the senior, starting in place of Josh Hoover. I know Seals was at Vandy before. Where was he before that? No, he was just Vandy. Okay, TCU and Vandy. This is 1, 2, 3, 4. Year number 5. And I can't really criticize, as I was someone who did go to college for 5.5 years. Just want to point out. 5.5 great years. And if you ask me if I want to go back right now, I would do it tomorrow. I would go back to college. So everyone makes fun of the kids with the NIL who maximize their college and they use the COVID years and they ask for the waivers to get a 6-7 season. Do it, man. Go stay in college as long as possible. No one told me how much laundry I'd be doing as an adult. No one told me how much time of my life I would be spending folding clothes as an adult. Not that I didn't do it in college, but you can get away with not doing it as much in college. At 40 years old, when I don't do it, I get yelled at by my girlfriend. So, all right, that's where we stand with all the action going on. We've got updates throughout the program. But unfortunately for a lot of people, I have to get back on my soapbox because, I was the first to react yesterday, having the benefit of being on the air following the Rams losing on Monday Night Football. And Matthew Stafford, who I am extremely biased in discussing, having a 55-1 ticket on him. I also did hedge Drake May. I will be up in the market no matter what. But obviously, 55-1, I bet less and I'm winning more in that bet than I am with Drake May. And I want to be very clear about this. I'm not saying Drake May isn't deserving of being the MVP. I just think Stafford's more deserving, okay? I think Stafford, with context, it's inarguable he's had a better season. And, I heard earlier on Money Moves, JVT was joined by Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports, who's awesome. And he made a point that I understand is the truth, but I don't know why we accept it as the truth. Why is this the way we think? And it's that if you're going to be the MVP, you're going to have to win your division. I believe he said going back to 2008, the MVP of the league had been a division winner, a quarterback from a division-winning team. But I never understood that because the MVP is an individual award. It has nothing to do with the team's success. Because what if someone has a monster season and has no defense and puts up historical numbers? We're not going to acknowledge that person had a great year, the best year in football, because his team maybe wasn't the best in their division, wasn't the best in their conference. This is an individual achievement. The team success comes with, I don't know, hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. And this isn't just specific to Frank Schwab. This isn't specific to anyone who wants to talk about Drake May winning the East and that playing a role in this. This is big picture when we talk about sports as a whole, because my idol in this business is Christopher Mad Dog Russo. I grew up listening to him on WFAN, and he used to drive me insane how he would hold it against a Patrick Ewing, a Mike Piazza, a Charles Barkley, that they never won a championship, as if there weren't other guys on the team playing a role in them doing so, or not doing so, I should say. And if we're going to judge players that way, if we're going to factor in the team achievements as that goes to the individual, are we saying that Luke Longley and Charles Barkley, Luke Longley had a better NBA career than Charles Barkley because Luke Longley's got some rings for playing with Michael Jordan? Like, that doesn't equate to me. So I don't believe that just because Stafford and the Rams are not winning the West, that means he can't win this award, because objectively, and I'm being objective, even though I am biased with my bet, the numbers support Stafford every step of the way. But if you want to play that game, you want to play the game where we've got Drake May 1-2 straight up against teams above 500. We've got Stafford 4-3, a game above 500 against teams above 500. I think that's, I'll give you a wash there. I'll give you a wash when it comes to them and them unable to win their division. But when I look at both these guys, I heard a lot of talk about, you know, Matthew Stafford struggled against the Atlanta Falcons. But hold on. Drake May struggled against the Atlanta Falcons. Sure, they won the game 24-23. They also had the benefit of playing at home. But May threw an interception. He was, I believe, 19th in EPA per play in that game against the Falcons. Now, he's second in EPA per play on the season. But Stafford had to go on the road, take on a Falcons team that was actually better than the version that Drake May faced, because Kirk Cousins was at quarterback, which is an upgrade over Michael Penix. And that defense was difficult for both of them to deal with. And for Matthew Stafford, that's his worst game, where he threw three interceptions, which is the exact total that Drake May currently has when it comes to picks. So right now, the Rams at this point in time have played a 563 strength of schedule. That is the highest the playoff team has ever had since 2004. That lets you know what this team has overcome. And coming off the loss to the Falcons, the market completely overreacted to what went on in that game, and Drake May became a minus 330 favorite for the MVP. Matthew Stafford is 2.5-1, and Kay Adams, who I actually think might be a Patriots fan, is there a chance, went on her show on FanDuel Network and reacted to the line movement by saying this.
Are we getting a little carried away here? You guys getting a little boozy Susie towards the end of the year over there with your algorithms, you overlords making these lines and stuff? I don't know. I think it should be more of a close neck and neck situation, don't you? Not this overwhelming. It's minus 475 in favor of Drake right now. I don't know about that. One performance should not offset Stafford's entire body of work to such a severe degree, in my opinion. He has 9 more touchdowns than the next closest quarterback. Drake's deserving of the love, yes, and do what you want to do on FanDuel Sportsbook. Let's not disrespect Stafford.
I agree with her, and she hates me. She won't remember it, but she did not like working with me back in the day when I produced a couple of her shows. She was not a fan of Dustin Sweetelton, and I know a lot of people listening right now who have Drake May tickets are also not fans of me right now, and that is okay. That is the beauty of this. We are allowed to disagree. Even though you're wrong and I'm right, I appreciate that you want to fight for your stance. And you know who agrees with me? Dan Orlovsky. Because again, context matters when it comes to this award and the results that we're looking at, because you want to compare the statistics of one Drake May, but I keep telling you, I don't care about your statistics. You played against inferior opponents, and Drake May can't control that, but I can still judge the whole of his season off of that. And Dan Orlovsky said that earlier when he went on the Pat McAfee show.
One, if I was voting today, I would vote for Stafford.
Oh,
two, I think Drake May's season this year, I really believe, is up there with as good a second year performance a quarterback has had in the NFL. I think it's a lot on par with what Joe did a couple years ago when he took Cincy to the playoffs and to the Super Bowl. This is what I would say for everybody that continues to point stats to me. Okay. And I understand stats, context, all that. You guys all want to talk about stats. You can't in one hand talk about the stats and in the other conversation say, well, who he did it against doesn't matter. Yes, it does. How you acquire the stats and who you acquire those stats against has to be a part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we have to knock people for it, but it has to provide context in how those stats were acquired.
Matthew Stafford's played the third hardest schedule of opposing pass defenses. Drake May has played the easiest. Stafford may have lost 3 of 5 on the road in December, but Drake May still lost to the Raiders and the Steelers in September, and neither of those have aged very well as the season's gone on. Stafford, in his final games, despite the 3 of 5 losses, 62%, 343 yards per game, 10 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. May's final games, 10 touchdowns, 2 rushing touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 5 of those touchdowns against the Jets. I just think when we look at these numbers, you have to add context constantly, and the context still provides that Matthew Stafford had a better season than Drake May. It's still not an argument for me. The market will adjust properly down the road.